welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
Hello, my guest today is Balaji Bhakta. He is the founder and CEO of Ventana Micro. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Daniel. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me to participate.
Yeah, so first we'd like to start off with how you came to the semiconductor industry.
That's a journey that started 30 years ago. I came to the Valley and set up a startup to do semis. Initially, interestingly enough, I wasn't going to do semis. I was actually doing a software for storage management, and I used an FPGA-based device to demonstrate the software on notebooks, or back then laptops, and people were more excited about the FPGA design than my software. So I kind of got a clue that, okay, it's time for me to really focus on this FPGA logic that I developed to demonstrate software as being the main product. So that's kind of the genesis for me to get into semis. This was in 1991. Interestingly enough, that happened at a Comdex show. I don't know how many of your listeners still remember Comdex. Back in 1990, April in Chicago, that's when it all started. And I'm really delighted that I took cues from folks that led me down that path. And 30 years later, I'm still here in semis, going pretty strong.
Yeah, I actually started in the software industry as well, but this was maybe 30 plus years ago. And, you know, the software jobs weren't that plentiful back then. It was, you know, 10 hardware engineers for every software engineer. And so I quickly switched to hardware because it was very exciting at that time because all the systems companies made their own chips and, you know, and then the fabless industry came out. But yeah, it was interesting. Now I think maybe there's 10 software jobs for every hardware job. So it's kind of reverse, but I have no regrets at all. Semiconductors is an exciting place to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Same here.
So you've been in the semiconductor industry for 30 years. Just share with us how your view on how the industry has evolved over the years.
You know, it's really exciting to be in semis now. There's now been a better time. Semiconductors have pretty much proliferated every aspect of our lives, and they become core for several new exciting markets like AI, 5G, edge compute, autonomous driving, smartphones, and the explosion of cloud-based compute models, etc. So, you know, similar to open source software revolution that occurred towards the back end of 1990s, you're seeing something very similar happening in the semis now. There's a big push around open source ecosystem, open source processors, which become catalyst to drive innovation that kind of leads to scale and better overall unit economics, et cetera. So the open hardware innovation is a key catalyst. Secondly, if you look at it, the size of the market has grown tremendously. In 1990, it was about, 50 billion in size, the overall semiconductor market. And in 2020, it reached about half a trillion, and it's expected to reach a trillion in 2030. And if you go back and take a look at a typical processor in the 1990s, a high-performance processor would have about a million transistors. And in 2021, a similar processor has as much as 57 billion transistors. You know, that's a quantum leap in compute performance, mostly aided by the transistor densities one could achieve thanks to Moore's Law playing out predictably every 18 months. But that's kind of coming to an end. In the past decade, we saw Moore's Law become more and more flattening out, if you would. And the demand keeps growing and applications are exploding, but performance is flattening out. And So then how do you keep up with the performance demand that's increasing day by day? That's where, you know, people are now beginning to think about new architectural innovations. And so that's kind of where we are. And also you've seen in the last decade, huge semiconductor consolidation, fewer choices, very large companies, and they extend the overall life cycle of their silicon. So choices have become somewhat limited. That leave your traditional users of those silicons, like system vendors and large OEMs and hyperscalers like Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Alibaba, and folks like that, resorting to developing their own in-house silicon. So these are the trends we've been seeing in the past 30 years. So, you know, it's a very interesting time to be in semis.
Yeah, I agree. Probably the most exciting time in my career, for sure. So let's talk about trends. What trends in the DC market compelled you to start another startup, Ventana?
Yeah, so if you look at it, you know, over the past decade or so, social media explosion and the proliferation of mobile compute devices to the tune of, what, 15 billion, not just handheld devices, but the mobile devices in various forms, they're now up to 15 billion. They set off a hyper growth cycle of data centers in motion over the past decade, and there's no slowdown anywhere in sight. And then, you know, the app-based cloud-centric business models that are continuing to explode will drive the data center growth even further. So, you know, global data center power usage is currently about, what, 3% of the worldwide energy consumption, and it's expected to grow to something like 13% by some estimates if we continue to use the existing data center architectural models. That's not sustainable. And especially as we look at, you know, transitioning from our economy from the, you know, existing energy model to more of a greener economy, you really have to do whatever one can to make sure that the data center architecture is extremely power efficient while keeping up with the performance demands. And analyzing new innovations that deliver a sustainable performance per watt per dollar metric that can only be achieved through hardware that's optimized for workloads while maximizing compute power and reducing overall energy consumed through innovations like domain-specific architecture, workload-optimized and disaggregated servers and things like that. And the only way you can achieve those types of architectural innovations is by using open and extensible RISC-V architecture. And that was the founding premise for Ventana. We've done a processor company before trying to go after similar applications, but RISC-V gives you a set of unique tools in the form of open and extensible architecture that allow you to do these kinds of things that would eventually bend the curve of overall power consumption by your data center more towards a sustainable level. And your cost is going to be in line with where you want to be so you can achieve overall unit economics the way the hyperscalers and OEMs want to see that happen. So that was the motivation behind Ventana.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're right on. You know, this market, though, boy, I tell you, there's so many startups. It's a really broad landscape. You know, how are you differentiating from the other players in the data center or the compute space?
You know, Ventana is fundamentally different because we come from the data center space. We understand the pain points. And we also have had the experience in mapping out best ways to address these pain points better than anyone else can. So the know-how, having done this before and having had the opportunity to work with large hyperscalers and data center operators and understanding what their future looks like from their vantage point was extremely helpful. And then combining the benefits of, as I said before, the open and extensible RISC-V architecture with our data center pedigree, we were able to develop a family of processors, develop grounds up to incorporate some of these innovations that we just talked about from the get-go. So we were doing this in stealth for about 2.5 years without any distraction. And that gave us a huge leg up over anybody else who wants to do something with RISC-V in this high performance space. And then the way we go to market with this is not in the form of IP. We are taking more of a chiplet-based approach that allows all these benefits to be conferred to our customers while delivering rapid productization capability and reduced development cost, risks associated with developing a complex product like this, while delivering unprecedented energy efficiency and ROI. So we are completely different from that perspective.
Interesting. So let's talk about RISC-V. RISC-V is a huge source of traffic for us. The ecosystem is growing rapidly. So how have things changed since you started Ventana? And is RISC-V ready for data center applications?
It's a great question, Daniel. So if you look at it, RISC-V has seen tremendous growth over the past few years. What are the metrics? It's just like, look at the developer base, right? From the time we started RISC-V, company Ventana, the membership grew from 400 members to about 2,400 this year. So you've seen a broad-based support for high-performance data center and HPC use cases from hyperscalers in the US, China, and Europe. I just hosted a panel at the RBA Summit this week with guests from Google, Alibaba, European Processor Initiative, and OCP under Facebook. And I would encourage your listeners to take a listen to it. And you'll hear a resounding message from all these folks with excitement about RISC-V being the right architecture in most of these applications in the data center, mainly to drive efficiency, efficiency at workload level, overall energy consumption level, while keeping up the scaling needs. So RISC-V has a huge role to play, and it became very clear when we saw the hyperscalers from all these different continents come out and support this en masse. And then the software ecosystem has matured considerably to the point where it's ready for real production deployment. And we saw proof points at the show. So it is quite ready, yes.
Yeah, I was at the Design Automation Conference as well, and the RISC-V section of the conference, because it's co-located, was the busiest section in the conference. It was quite shocking to me. The rest of the conference was less attended, but I will definitely see the replay on that, and I'll put it on a link in the notes. Just one more question about RISC-V. What other markets can adopt RISC-V in the near future? A mobile IC, but data center is interesting. What else?
Daniel, that's a great question. So the beauty of RISC-V is its openness, and CPU is the center of innovation going forward. If you want to achieve efficiency, you need to innovate, and software-defined everything is the way of the future. So if you kind of take that into account, data center accounts for about 20 billion TAM. And the next major market one could look at is the 5G infrastructure and edge compute market. That's expected to be reaching about 10 billion by 2025. And then networking, storage, and security, that's expected to be about 7.5 billion. And the next big market after that is AI accelerators, about 9 billion. And then you have fully self-driving use cases in automotives, about 6 billion in size. And beyond all of this, as RISC-V makes its way into the client compute side, and you've seen Alibaba port the entire Android on RISC-V. And so that kind of sets that wheel in motion. And that market is about 40 billion in size. So you put it all together, you're looking at a market that's about 90 billion. So it's a huge market. And the key is to start with very high performance processors that can be customized to be workload centric and power efficient.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think about 5G, but yeah, absolutely. Automotive for sure. It's exciting, that's for sure. You know, the one other thing that I think is exciting is you've chosen to focus on a chiplet strategy. So how do you see the chiplet approach adoption in the next couple of years?
You know, great question. Chiplets have been in the works for a while now. You've seen chiplets be broadly deployed very successfully at volume by major companies like AMD. And we have been working on developing an open interoperable chiplet standard called ODSA, which is under the Open Compute Project. ODSA stands for Open Domain Specific Architecture. So what it allows you to do is to have a chiplet to chiplet interoperability. And once you have the ecosystem participants from the hyperscalers, silicon guys, system guys, and large OEMs all come together, and the packaging houses, they all come together and agree upon what that spec looks like. And if everybody plays to that particular spec, then it becomes so easy to deploy chiplets. It becomes cost effective, and your end-to-end supply chain becomes very reliable. So that's where we are with chiplets. So the work has been going on for a number of years, and there is a standard called ODSA BRW that I'm really excited about. And it's inexpensive. You don't need expensive packaging to make this thing happen. You can use regular organic substrate to get the chiplets fully implemented in various configurations. So I would say chiplet is ready to take off, and we see it happening very soon. Sometime next year and beyond, you'll see more and more products come out based on chiplet architecture.
Yeah, I agree. I spend a lot of time with TSMC, and they're really big on the chiplet strategy, and they're really pushing the ecosystem to support chiplets, and it's already coming together. I think it's actually very close. You're right, next year for sure. And I think RISC-V is uniquely positioned for chiplets. So I think the chiplet strategy will just boom in the RISC-V ecosystem.
What you said is absolutely true. The open RISC-V standard and open chiplet architecture promoted by ODSA, they go hand in hand. They go so hand in hand together to deliver on a lot of these applications. So yeah, absolutely. And another beauty of chiplet-based architecture is you can put compute in the most advanced process node. Compute would want to live in the bleeding edge of process geometries. So you can keep the compute chiplet or even an AI accelerated chiplet in, say, 5 nanometer, but the rest of the logic, which tends to have PCIe, memory, and all the other building blocks for connecting and storing, etc., they can actually be implemented in a 16 nanometer process. Why? Because that part of the chiplet is going to have a lot of moving parts. And also, you have a lot of analog mixed signal content in that silicon. These IPs tend to be doing better in N-2, like, you know, cutting edge -2 process geometries, because they take a while to mature and get to a point of yielding, you know, very high. So for you to be having these things in N-2 in a different chiplet allows you to have best of both worlds. So the compute chiplet can be in the cutting edge process geometry, and all the moving parts where customers want to innovate and add their accelerators and things like that, that can be in a 16 or 12 nanometer. And that allows you to customize your workload-centric design and tape out more and more flavors in 16, which is cost-effective, and then combine them together at a solution level to get to your end product. So that's the beauty of chiplets.
Yeah, I agree. You know, design enablement is really what I'm all about. You know, SemiWiki is the design enablement portal. You know, we're the number one portal in the world. You know, the other thing is I track design starts, and you know, they're the lifeblood of the semiconductor industry, and RISC-V has been a huge boom to the design start business, and chiplets is also, you know, a boom, and it's just it's a 1+1=3 type of situation if you combine RISC-V and chiplets and the open market. I think it's great. So I think this is a good time to stop. Thank you for your time. And I want to thank everybody for participating and listening in the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. And have a great day.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for the opportunity.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.